Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
In the last episode, we talked about the financial ascent of Bobby Baker, whose net worth increased from $10,000 to $2.1 million while he worked for Lyndon Johnson as secretary to the Senate Majority Leader. That's an impressive climb, but Bobby Baker's wealth was a drop in the bucket compared to the subject of today's episode, Billy Sol Estes, who, by the way, claimed that his net worth in 1961 was a whopping $400 million. In this episode, we cover the rise and fall of Billy Sol Estes, with an emphasis on his connections to Lyndon Johnson and the mysterious death of federal agriculture official Henry Marshall.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. Billy Sol Estes had money and ambition from a young age. When he was a kid one year for Christmas, he asked for a lamb, and then he let other farmers in the area know that he would take care of their orphaned lambs, which eventually led to Estes having a large herd of lamb and sheep that he sold for a profit. As a teenager, Estes found out about a government program to pay farmers to clear cactus. Estes paid half of the government funds to his friends to clear the cactus. He paid the farmers 20% to let them do it, and he took a 30% cut for himself. According to Estes, that was when he first realized that government funds can be an inexhaustible vein of wealth. When he was 18 years old, Estes had the equivalent of just over $700,000 in today's money. Billy Sol Estes wasn't just a wheeler dealer, he was also a legitimate farmer. He was so good at farming that in 1943, he won the National 4-H Club Award for being the best young farmer in America. The award was presented to Estes by President Franklin D. Roosevelt. During World War II, Estes served in the Merchant Marines. After the war, he met Cliff Carter in Abilene at a meeting about the future of Texas agriculture. Carter was a close associate of Lyndon Johnson, having worked for him as a campaign volunteer since 1937. Carter was also a businessman himself. He owned the local Pepsi bottling plant in Bryan, Texas. Estes and Carter hit it off right away and decided to go into business together. However, as Estes would find out, the cost of doing business with Cliff Carter and using the associated clout of Lyndon Johnson was 10% of the gross revenues of the business. The first business venture between Estes and Carter involved the sale of prefabricated homes that had formerly been used for military bases during the war. Estes bought the homes at public auctions, but Cliff Carter, leveraging his relationship with Johnson, was able to get inside information about those sales. According to Estes, on a few occasions, Carter even paid off other potential bidders to ensure a, quote, peaceful auction. The next project involved buying large parcels of land near the town of Pecos. Estes realized that the dry West Texas soil was actually quite fertile if it had proper irrigation. But after speaking with some of the local residents, he found that most of them didn't have the money to irrigate their fields. Estes had an idea to get all of the local farmers to convert from electric to gas water pumps because gas was so much cheaper in West Texas. When Estes asked Cliff Carter for financial support on the large project, Carter assured him that Lyndon Johnson backed the venture. Carter then introduced Estes to Harvey Morrison, the head of a pipeline company who helped him fund the gas pump business. It was called the Pecos Growers Gas Company. In addition to growing his own crops in Pecos, Estes then got into the fertilizer business, where his strategy was to undercut all of his competitors in hopes of eventually having a monopoly. That strategy led Estes to lose large sums of money and require outside financing. Estes then turned to his fertilizer manufacturer, Commercial Solvents, for cash. When Estes was already $500,000 in the hole to Commercial Solvents, he told company president Maynard Wheeler that he needed another $400,000. Estes explained that he needed this money to offset fertilizer losses and for building new grain storage silos that he could ensure would be kept full through his relationship with Lyndon Johnson. Maynard Wheeler wanted assurances from Johnson himself, so he called Johnson, and LBJ told him, quote, "If Billy builds the storage facilities, I'll make sure they stay full." In the mid-1950s, in order to support the price of grain for farmers, the government limited grain production and paid a minimum price for it as long as farmers did not produce too much. The government needed somewhere to store all of this excess grain that it was buying. Estes then jumped into the grain storage business, at first in Pecos and later in Plainview, Texas. According to Estes, the Plainview grain storage business was the only time that Lyndon Johnson gave money to him instead of him giving it to Johnson. In exchange for $500,000 in cash provided by Cliff Carter, Estes was to provide LBJ with a 20% royalty on all income instead of the usual 10%. In 1957, cotton became a crop that, like grain, had government-imposed limits on how much a farmer could grow. Each farmer had a specific allotment based on the size of the farm. Keep in mind that in the late 1950s, post-war America was booming, which meant that a lot of new highways and roads were being built. The land for those roads came from local farmers from whom the government would buy the land under eminent domain. Farmers with a cotton allotment were eligible to reclaim the allotment that they lost through eminent domain if they later purchased more land. Billy Sol Estes went to displaced farmers who had cotton allotments and offered to sell land to them and then move their cotton allotment to the new land. But most farmers didn't have money or interest in buying new land that was far away from where they lived, especially the plots of land that Estes was selling, which had no access to water, not until Billy Sol Estes brought it in, and were 10 to 40 feet wide and a mile long, making them impossible to farm. The way the scheme worked was that Estes sold the land to the farmer, and once the government moved the cotton allotment to the land, he then leased it back from the farmer, but all of the lease payments were made up front to that farmer. Estes made the deal attractive for the farmers by spreading the payment out over 4 installments and giving them an upfront fee. When the farmers failed to make the mortgage payments, as was planned, the land would then revert back to Billy Sol Estes with the cotton allotments. And the farmers got a win because they retained the upfront fee. The cotton allotment rules meant that Estes had to reduce his cotton planting from 1,440 acres to just 400 acres. Estes's response to the new rules was to try to get as much of the cotton allotments as possible and to start a new fertilizer business with the extra acreage that he had been using to farm cotton. As noted earlier, his strategy for the fertilizer business was to lose money by undercutting the competition in an effort to one day have a monopoly. As of the summer of 1959, that strategy was not going very well. It was at this point that Billy Sol came up with his most obviously fraudulent scheme. He approached farmers to buy fertilizer tanks on credit, sign mortgages on the tanks, and then lease the tanks back to Estes. The farmers got an upfront fee, just like with the cotton allotments, and they didn't have to do anything after that. The problem was that the tanks the farmers were purchasing did not actually exist. Still, Estes used the fertilizer tank mortgages for these non-existent tanks as collateral to borrow $22 million, $238 million in today's money. Though Estes did not possess all of the fertilizer tanks that he said he did, he had a stash of 34,000 metal serial-numbered tank plates. When bank auditors would show up looking to inventory the tanks, Estes and his men would keep the auditors occupied while they moved portable tanks to different locations and changed the tank plates. Even though the fertilizer scam was pure fraud, Estes thought he had a pretty clever scheme to be able to get around the cotton allotment rules effectively and arguably legally. By 1960, Estes had acquired 3,200 acres of cotton allotments from 116 farmers. All it took to derail Estes's cotton scheme was one by-the-book inspector. That's because the cotton allotment transfers had to first be approved by the USDA's Stabilization and Conservation Service Committee. If the committee had concerns about a transfer, they notified the cotton acreage specialist in the state office. In Texas, that man was Henry Marshall. Marshall, who had been with the USDA for 25 years, became aware of Estes' cotton allotment scheme on August 31st, 1960, when he wrote that the regulations needed to be strengthened so that they could stop what Estes was doing. A few months later, in early January of 1961, the USDA updated its rules to require that the farmers buying the land, the ones who previously lost their cotton allotment due to eminent domain, had to actually show up in the county offices where the allotment was being moved. This was a major problem for Estes because the farmers didn't want to do the deal if it meant that they had to travel long distances. On January 17, 1961, Estes sent his lawyer, John Dennison, to go speak to Henry Marshall about these new regulations. Marshall doubled down and told Dennison that the scheme was illegal and that Estes would be prosecuted if he continued to do it. Marshall was offered a promotion to Washington, D.C. around this time, but he turned it down. When Estes wrote to Cliff Carter to let him know how bad the new in-person cotton allotment transfer rule hurt his business, Lyndon Johnson sprung into action. LBJ, as the newly sworn-in vice president, wrote a letter to the new secretary of the USDA, Orville Freeman, asking him to intervene in the matter because the new regulations were unreasonably burdensome for farmers. Freeman then changed the rule so that it was interpreted by local officials who could consider exceptions to it and waive the requirement that farmers appear in person. But for Henry Marshall, The mere fact that local officials now had the discretion to not follow the rule didn't mean that the rule shouldn't be followed. Marshall personally led a campaign in county offices throughout Texas in an effort to stop Billy Sol Estes's cotton allotment scheme. Even after changing the law from the top down in the way Estes wanted, state cotton specialist Henry Marshall continued to be a problem for Billy Sol Estes. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code JFK. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. They found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Best of all, not only is every product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, you can get 20% off of your first order with code JFK. So head on over to Mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches the mood you're looking for. 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code JFK. This episode of Solving JFK is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. On the morning of Saturday, June 3rd, 1961, Henry Marshall went to work at his 1,500-acre ranch around dawn. Marshall never came home that day. His dead body was found later that evening by his brother-in-law lying in the grass near the driver's side of his truck in a remote part of the ranch. Marshall had bruises on his face, hands, and arms, and 5 gunshot wounds from .22 caliber bullets. There were no photos taken of the crime scene, no blood samples, no checks for fingerprints, and the truck was washed and waxed shortly after. Robertson County Sheriff Howard Stiegel quickly ruled Marshall's death to be suicide. This ruling was perplexing to those who were familiar with the facts of the case. Henry Marshall's death was put in the spotlight about a year later in May of 1962 after USDA Secretary Orville Freeman said that Henry Marshall was the key figure in the Billy Sol Estes scandal. Additionally, the efforts of Captain Clint Peoples of the Texas Rangers convinced District Judge John Barron to call a grand jury on the matter of how exactly Henry Marshall died. After Marshall's body was exhumed, the medical examiner, Dr. Joseph Yahimchek, concluded that Marshall's death was the result of 5 gunshot wounds and that Marshall's body had an estimated 30% carbon monoxide level when he died. Dr. Yahimchek's final ruling was, quote, possible suicide, probable homicide. However, he added that, quote, if in fact this is a suicide, it is the most unusual one I have seen during the examination of approximately 15,000 deceased persons. The finding of carbon monoxide poisoning further complicated matters for anyone arguing that Marshall died from suicide. Given the evidence, for Marshall to have ended his own life, he would have had to, 1, pull his shirt up over his head to assist him in inhaling a lethal dose of carbon monoxide from his truck, 2, tuck his shirt back into his pants after being poisoned. 3, strike himself in the head, causing his eye to protrude. And 4, shoot himself 5 times with a bolt-action rifle, which would require that he hold it at arm's length to work the bolt and to reload after each shot. J. Edgar Hoover underscored the absurdity of the idea that Marshall's death was self-inflicted when he wrote in the margin of a May 21st, 1962 memo, "I just can't understand how one can fire 5 shots at himself." The 1962 grand jury got the direct attention of President Kennedy and his brother, the Attorney General. The president personally called Judge Barron about the case once. The Attorney General called him 10 or 12 times asking for updates. That's a lot of calls given that the grand jury was only in session for 11 days. When Estes was called to testify at the grand jury, he pled the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination. In the end, the 1962 grand jury found that the cause of Henry Marshall's death was inconclusive. According to the 2 dissenting jurors who believed that Marshall was murdered, the jury foreman, local feed store owner Price Metcalf Jr., tried to exert pressure on the jurors to keep the status quo. It turns out that Price Metcalf Jr. was the son-in-law of Sheriff Stegall. 3 of the other jurors were also related to the sheriff. On top of that, the sheriff's cousin, Glenn Stegall, worked for Lyndon Johnson in the executive office building in Washington. Billy Sol Estes's problems with the government did not go away when Henry Marshall died. On October 18, 1961, Estes met in Washington with Wilson Tucker, the deputy director of the USDA's Cotton Division. Estes tried to make his case to Tucker about why his cotton allotment scheme was not illegal, but Tucker didn't agree. Tucker would later testify that, quote, "Estes stated that this pooled cotton allotment matter had caused the death of one person and then asked me if I knew Henry Marshall." In September of 1961, Estes was fined $42,000 for having illegal cotton allotments. Even with that fine, he still managed to be appointed to the National Cotton Advisory Board by USDA Director Freeman just a few months later. That board seat gave Estes the opportunity to help set the overall regulatory framework of the USDA's cotton program. There was still another mid-level manager at the USDA who believed that Estes had been shown favoritism and should be investigated. N. Battle Hales. However, when Hales attempted to take action against Estes, he was shifted to other work within the USDA in a section of the department where Hales' former direct reports could not find him. In April of 1962, after Hales had been reassigned, his former secretary, Mary Kimbrough Jones, insisted on finding Hales. After she demanded to speak with Hales, a doctor showed up at the USDA offices and blocked her exit. Jones was then taken to the DC General Hospital as a mental patient. She was stripped of her clothes and left in a room with only a pajama top and a sheet. She was then determined to be, quote, "a very sick girl in need of treatment for mental disease." You may recall a man named Jack Puterbaugh from our series on the Secret Service. Puterbaugh worked for the Democratic National Committee and was involved in the planning of the motorcade in Dallas on November 22, 1963. In addition to being a loyal LBJ supporter, Puterbaugh is the man who replaced N. Battle Hales at the USDA after Hales tried to hold Estes accountable. The business operations of Billy Sol Estes were the subject of congressional hearings, which began in May of 1962. Those hearings eventually led to Estes being charged and convicted on the fraudulent ammonia tank storage scam in 1963. He was sentenced to 24 years in prison, yet Estes managed to get out after just 8 years. In 1979, Billy Sol Estes would end up right back in prison again. He was found guilty on a $600,000 scheme to lease non-existent steam cleaners for oil field equipment. If that sounds familiar, it's because it's exactly what Estes did with the fertilizer tanks, which led to his initial incarceration. As we've discussed in this episode, Henry Marshall's death was initially considered to be self-inflicted, despite evidence indicating otherwise. There were four other associates of Billy Sol Estes who also met an untimely death around the time of Estes' downfall. On April 2nd, 1962, at a time when the Estes scandal was on the front page of many newspapers, just before Congress began its investigations, two FBI agents interviewed George Krutulek, who was Estes's chief accountant. Krutulek's dead body was found just 2 days later in the desert near El Paso. A hose had been hooked to Krutulek's vehicle, which made it appear that he was trying to poison himself with carbon monoxide. But the autopsy revealed that there was no carbon monoxide in Krutulek's lungs, leading to a ruling that he was killed by a heart attack, despite the fact that he had a severe bruise on his head. Coleman Wade was the contractor responsible for building Estes's grain storage facilities in Plainview, Texas. Wade was aware of Estes's connections to Cliff Carter and Lyndon Johnson. In early 1963, Wade's private plane crashed outside of Kermit, Texas, after leaving a meeting with Billy Sol Estes in Pecos. The plane crash had no survivors. Harold Orr was a business associate of Billy Sol's who was convicted for his role in Estes's fraud. Orr was about to begin his 10-year prison sentence when, on February 28, 1964, he was found dead in his garage. The authorities ruled it to be an accidental death due to carbon monoxide poisoning. A few weeks later, Howard Pratt, the Chicago office manager for commercial solvents, Estes's number one finance source for the fertilizer tank business, was found dead in his car. Pratt's official cause of death was, once again, carbon monoxide poisoning. We can't say that Krutulek, Wade, Orr, and Pratt were all killed so that they wouldn't talk about Johnson's connection to Estes. Still, the fact that all of these unnatural deaths happened so close together and all had a close connection to Billy Sol Estes is certainly worth noting. Next time on Solving JFK, we continue analyzing issues related to Billy Sol Estes as we pivot to Estes's claims about Lyndon Johnson's alleged hitman, Mack Wallace. Was Wallace Johnson's hitman? And did he participate in the assassination of President Kennedy? If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.